They've got to have figured about Belips. Suppose they figure about me and Albert. Did any of them look like sailors? Did any of them seem like they were sailors? Let me think. Maybe. The pleasant one, maybe. Possibly him, that young one. I have to find out about that, because if they figure on doing without Albert or me from the start, there's no way. Sooner or later, they will figure on us. But in the Gulf, you got time. And I'm figuring all the time. I've got to think right, all the time. I can't make a mistake. Not a mistake. Not once. Well, I got something to think about now, all right? Something to do and something to think about besides wondering what the hell's going to happen. Besides wondering what's going to happen to the whole damn thing. Once they put it up. Once you're playing for it. Once you got a chance. Instead of just watching it all go to hell. With no boat to make a living with. That B-Lips. He don't know what he's into. He ain't got any idea what this is going to be like. I hope he shows up pretty soon down at Freddy's. I got plenty to do tonight. I better get something to eat. Chapter 11. It was about 9:30 when B-Lips came into the place. He could see they'd given him plenty out at Richard's because when he drinks it makes him cocky, and he came in plenty cocky. "Well, Big Shot," he says to Harry. "Don't Big Shot me," Harry told him. "I want to talk to you, Big Shot." "Where, back in your office?" Harry asked him. "Yes, back there. Anybody back there, Freddy?" "Not since that law. Say, how long are they going to have that 6 o'clock business?" "Why don't you retain me to do something about it?" B-Lips says. "Retain you, hell," Freddy tells him. And the two of them go back there where the booths and the cases with the empty bottles are. There was one electric light on in the ceiling, and Harry looked in all the booths where it was dark and saw there was no one. "Well," he said. "They want it for late day after tomorrow afternoon," B-Lips told him. "What they going to do?" "You speak Spanish," B-Lips said.
"You didn't tell him that, though."
"No, I'm your pal, you know that."
"You'd rat on your own mother."
"Cut it out. Look what I'm letting you in on."
"When did you get tough?"
"Listen, I need the money. I've got to get out of here. I'm all washed up here. You know that, Harry."
"Who don't know that?"
"You know how they've been financing this revolution with kidnapping and the rest of it?"
"I know."
"This is the same sort of thing. They're doing it for a good cause."
"Yeah, but this is here. This is where you were born. You know everybody works there."
"Nothing's going to happen to anybody."
"With those guys?"
"I thought you had cojones."
"I got cojones. Don't you worry about my cojones. But I'm figuring on keeping on living here."
"I'm not," B-Lips said.
Jesus, thought Harry. He said it himself.
"I'm going to get out," B-Lips said. "When are you going to get the boat out?"
"Tonight."
"Who's going to help you?"
"You."
"Where are you going to put her?"
"Where I always put her."
There was nothing difficult about getting the boat out. It was as simple as Harry had figured it. The night watchman made his rounds on the hour, and the rest of the time he was at the outer gate of the old Navy Yard. They came into the basin in a skiff, cut her loose on the ebb tide, and she went out herself with the skiff towing her. Outside, while she drifted in the channel, Harry checked the motors and found all they had done was disconnect the distributor heads. He checked the gas and found she had close to 150 gallons. They hadn't siphoned any out of the tanks, and she had what he had left coming across that last time. He had filled her up before they started, and she had burned very little because they had to come across so slow in the heavy seas. "I've got gas at the house in the tank," he told B-Lips. "I can take one load of Dimmijohns out with me in the car, and Albert can bring another if we need it. I'm going to put her up in the creek right where it crosses the road. They can come out in a car."
"They wanted you to be right at the porter dock."
"How can I lay there with this boat?"
"You can't, but I don't think they'll want to do any car driving."
"Well, we'll put her there tonight and I can fill and do what needs to be done and then shift her. You can hire a speedboat to bring them out. I got to put her up there now. I got plenty to do. You scull in and drive out to the bridge and pick me up. I'll be on the road there in about 2 hours. I'll leave her and come out to the road."
"I'll pick you up," B-Lips told him, and Harry, with the motors throttled down so that she moved quietly through the water,
swung her around, and towed the skiff close in to where the riding light of the cable schooner showed. He threw the clutches out and held the skiff while B-Lips got in.
"In about 2 hours," he said.
"All right," said B-Lips.
Sitting on the steering seat, moving ahead slowly in the dark, keeping well out from the lights at the head of the docks, Harry thought, "B-Lips is doing some work for his money, all right. Wonder how much he thinks he's going to get. I wonder how he ever hooked up with those guys. There's a smart kid who had a good chance once. He's a good lawyer, too. But it made me cold to hear him say it himself. He put his mouth on his own self, all right. It's funny how a man can mouth something. When I heard him mouth himself, it scared me."
Chapter 12. When he came in the house, he did not turn on the light, but took off his shoes in the hall and went up the bare stairs in his stocking feet. He undressed and got into bed, wearing only his undershirt, before his wife woke. In the dark, she said, "Harry." And he said, "Go to sleep, old woman." "Harry, what's the matter?" "Going to make a trip."
"Who with?"
"Nobody. Albert, maybe."
"Whose boat?"
"I got the boat again."
"When?"
"Tonight."
"You'll go to jail, Harry."
"Nobody knows I've got her."
"Where is she?"
"Hid." Lying still in the bed, he felt her lips on his face, and searching for him, and then her hand on him, and he rolled over against her close.
"Do you want to?"
"Yes, now."
"I was asleep. Do you remember when we do it asleep?"
"Listen, do you mind the arm? Don't it make you feel funny?"
"You're silly. I like it. Any that you I like. Put it across there. Put it along there. Go on. I like it, true."
"It's like a flipper on a loggerhead."
"You ain't no loggerhead. Do they really do it 3 days? Coot for 3 days?"
"Sure. Listen, be quiet. We'll wake the girls."
"They don't know what I've got. They won't never know what I've got." "Ah, Harry, that's it. Ah, you honey."
"Wait."
"I don't want no wait. Come on, that's it. That's where. Listen, did you ever do it with a nigger wench?"
"Sure."
"What's it like?"
"Like nurse shark."
"You're funny. Harry, I wish you didn't have to go. I wish you didn't ever have to go. Who's the best you ever did it with?"
"You."
"You lie. You always lie to me. There. 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 No, you're the best. I'm old.
You'll never be old.
I've had that thing."
"That don't make no difference when a woman's any good."
"Go ahead. Go ahead now. Put the stump there. Hold it there. Hold it. Hold it now. Hold it."
"We're making too much noise.
We're whispering."
"I got to get out before it's daylight."
"You go to sleep. I'll get you up. When you come back, we'll have a time. We'll go to a hotel up in Miami like we used to. Just like we used to. Some place where they never seen either of us. Why couldn't we go to New Orleans?"
"Maybe," Harry said. "Listen, Marie, I got to go to sleep now."
"We'll go to New Orleans?"
"Why not? Only I got to go to sleep."
"Go to sleep. You're my big honey. Go on to sleep. I'll wake you. Don't you worry."
He went to sleep with the stump of his arm out wide on the pillow, and she lay for a long time looking at him. She could see his face in the streetlight through the window.
"I'm lucky," she was thinking. "Those girls, they don't know what they'll get. I know what I've got and what I've had. I've been a lucky woman." Him saying like a loggerhead. I'm glad it was an arm and not a leg. I wouldn't like him to have lost a leg. Why do you have to lose that arm? It's funny, though. I don't mind it. Anything about him I don't mind. I've been a lucky woman. There ain't no other men like that. People ain't never tried them, don't know. I've had plenty of them. I've been lucky to have him.
Do you suppose those turtles feel like we do? Do you suppose all that time they feel like that? Or do you suppose it hurts the she? I think of the damnedest things. Look at him, sleeping just like a baby. I better stay awake so as to call him. Christ, I could do that all night if a man was built that way. I'd like to do it and never sleep. Never, never, no, never. No, never, never, never. Well, think of that, will you? Me at my age? I ain't old. He said I was still good. 45 ain't old. I'm 2 years older than him. Look at him sleep. Look at him asleep there like a kid.
2 hours before it was daylight, they were out at the gas tank in the garage, filling and corking Dimmijohns and putting them in the back of the car. Harry wore a hook strapped to his right arm and shifted and lifted the wicker-covered Dimmijohns handily.
You don't want no breakfast?
When I come back.
Don't you want your coffee?
You got it?
Sure, I put it on when we came out.
Bring it out. She brought it out and he drank it in the dark, sitting at the wheel of the car. She took the cup and put it on the shelf in the garage.
I'm coming with you to help you handle the jugs, she said.
All right, he told her, and she got in beside him. A big woman, long-legged, big-handed, big-hipped, still handsome, a hat pulled down over her bleached blonde hair. In the dark and the cold of the morning, they drove out the county road through the mist that hung heavy over the flat.
What you worried about, Harry?
I don't know. I'm just worried. Listen, are you letting your hair grow out?
I thought I would. The girls have been after me.
The hell with them. You keep it like it is.
Do you really want me to?
Yes, he said. That's the way I like it.
You don't think I look too old?
You look better than any of them.
I'll fix it up then. I can make it blonder if you like it.
What have the girls got to say about what you do? Harry said. They got no business to bother you.
You know how they are. You know young girls are that way. Listen, if you make a good trip, we'll go to New Orleans, should we?
Miami.
Well, Miami anyway, and we'll leave them here.
I got some trip to make first.
You aren't worried, are you?
No.
You know, I lay awake almost 4 hours just thinking about you.
You're some old woman.
I can think about you any time and get excited.
Well, we got to fill this gas now, Harry told her.
Chapter 13. At 10 o'clock in the morning in Freddy's place, Harry was standing in against the bar with 4 or 5 others and 2 customs men had just left. They had asked him about the boat and he had said he did not know anything about it.
Where were you last night? One of them asked. Here and at home.
How late were you here?
Until the place shut.
Anybody see you here?
Plenty of people, Freddy said.
What's the matter? Harry asked them. Do you think I'd steal my own boat? What'd I do with it?
I just asked you where you were, the customs house officer said. Don't get plugged.
I'm not plugged, Harry said. I was plugged back when they seized the boat without any proof she carried liquor.
There was an affidavit sworn to, the customs man said.
It wasn't my affidavit. You know the man that made it.
All right, said Harry. Only don't say I'm plugged at you asking me. I'd rather you had her tied up. Then I got a chance to get her back. What chance I got if she's stolen?
None, I guess, said the customs man.
Well, go peddle your papers, Harry said.
Don't get snotty, said the customs man, or I'll see you get something to be snotty about.
After 15 years, said Harry.
You haven't been snotty 15 years.
No, and I haven't been in jail either.
Well, don't be snotty or you will be.
Take it easy, Harry said.
Just then this goofy Cuban that drives a taxi came in with a fella from the plane and Big Roger says to him, Jesus, they tell me you had a baby.
Yes, sir, says Jesus very proudly.
When did you get married? Roger asked him.
Last a month. Month afore last. You come the wedding?
No, said Roger. I didn't come the wedding.
You miss a something, said Jesus. You miss a damn fine wedding.
What's the matter you no come?
You didn't ask me.
Oh, yes, said Jesus. I forget. I didn't ask you.
You get what you want, he asked the stranger.
Yes, I think so. Is that the best price you have on Bacardi?
Yes, sir, Freddy told him. That's the real Carta del Oro.
Listen, Jesus, what makes you think that's your baby?
Roger asks him.
That's not your baby. What you mean, not my baby? What you mean? By God, I no let you talk like that. What you mean, not my baby? You buy the cow, you no get the calf. That's my baby. My God, yes. My baby. Belong to me. Yes, sir.
He goes out with a stranger and the bottle of Bacardi and the laugh is on Roger, all right. That Jesus is a character, all right. Him and that other Cuban, Sweetwater. Just then in comes Bilips the lawyer and he says to Harry, the customs just went out to take your boat. Harry looked at him and you could see the murder come in his face. Bilips went on in the same tone without any expression in it. Somebody saw it in the mangroves from the top of one of those high WPA trucks and called up from where they're building the camp out at Boca Chica to the customs house. I just saw Herman Fredericks, he told me. Harry didn't say anything, but you could see the killing go out of his face, and his eyes came open natural again. Then he said to Bilips, "You hear everything, don't you?" "I thought you'd like to know," Bilips said in that same expressionless voice. "It's none of my concern," Harry said. "They ought to take better care of a boat than that." The two of them stood there at the bar, and neither one said anything until Big Roger and the two or three others had drifted out. Then they went in the back. "You're poison," Harry said. "Everything you touch is poison." "Is it my fault a truck could see it? You picked the place. You hid your own boat." "Shut up," Harry said. "Did they ever have high trucks like that before?" "That's the last chance I had to make any honest money. That's the last chance I got to go in a boat where there's any money. I let you know as soon as it happened. You're like a buzzard." "Cut it out," Bilips said. "They want to go late this afternoon now." "The hell they do. They're getting nervous about something." "What time do they want to go?"
5 o'clock.
"I'll get a boat. I'll carry them to hell."
"That isn't a bad idea."
"Don't mouth that now. Keep your mouth off my business."
"Listen, you big murdering slob," said Bilips. "I try to help you out and get you in on something,
and all you do is poison me. Shut up. You're poison to anybody that ever touched you.
Cut it out, you bully."
"Take it easy," Harry said. "I got to think. All I've done is think one thing out, and I got it thought out, and now I got to think out something else."
"Why don't you let me help you?"
"You come here at 12 o'clock and bring that money to put up for the boat." As they came out, Albert came up to the place and went up to Harry. "I'm sorry, Albert, I can't use you," Harry said. He had thought it out that far already.
"I'd go cheap," Albert said.
"I'm sorry," Harry said. "I got no need for you now."
"You won't get a good man for what I'll go for," Albert said.
"I'm going by myself."
"You don't want to make a trip like that alone," Albert said.
"Shut up," said Harry. "What do you know about it? Do they teach you my business on the relief?"
"Go to hell,"
said Albert. "Maybe I will," said Harry. Anybody looking at him could tell he was thinking plenty fast and he did not want to be bothered.
"I'd like to go,"
Albert said. "I can't use you," Harry said. "Let me alone, will you?" Albert went out and Harry stood there at the bar looking at the nickel machine, the two dime machines, and the quarter machine, and at the picture of Custer's last stand on the wall as though he'd never seen them.
"That was a good one Jesus told Big Roger about the baby, wasn't it?"
Freddy said to him, putting some coffee glasses in the bucket of soapy water. "Give me a package of Chesterfields," Harry said to him. He held the package under the flap of his arm and opened it at one corner, took a cigarette out and put it in his mouth, then dropped the package in his pocket and lit the cigarette. "What shape's your boat in, Freddy?" he asked.
"I just had her on the waves," Freddy said. "She's in good shape."
"Do you want to charter her?"
"What for?"
"For a trip across."
"Not unless they put up the value of her."
"What's she worth?"
$1,200.
"I'll charter her," Harry said. "Will you trust me on her?"
"No,"
Freddy told him. "I'll put up the house as security."
"I don't want your house. I want $1,200 up."
All right, Harry said. Bring around the money, Freddy told him.
When B-Lips comes in, tell him to wait for me, Harry said, and went out.
Chapter 14. Out at the house, Marie and the girls were having lunch.
Hello, Daddy, said the oldest girl. Here's Daddy.
What have you got to eat? Harry asked.
We've got a steak, Marie said.
Somebody said they stole your boat, Daddy.
They found her, Harry said.
Marie looked at him.
Who found her? She asked.
The customs.
Oh, Harry, she said, full of pity.
Isn't it better they found her, Daddy?
Asked the second one of the girls.
Don't talk while you're eating, Harry told her. Where's my dinner? What you waiting for?
I'm bringing it.
I'm in a hurry, Harry said. You girls eat up and get out. I gotta talk to your mother.
Can we have some money to go to the show this aft, Daddy?
Why don't you go swimming? That's free.
Oh, Daddy, it's too cold to go swimming, and we want to go to the show.
All right, said Harry. All right.
When the girls were out of the room, he said to Marie,
Cut it up, will you?
Sure, honey.
She cut the meat as for a small boy.
Thanks, Harry said. I'm a hell of a goddamn nuisance, ain't I? Those girls aren't much, are they?
No, hon.
Funny we couldn't get no boys.
That's because you're such a man. That way it always comes out, girls.
I ain't no hell of a man, Harry said. But listen, I'm going on a hell of a trip.
Tell me about the boat.
They saw it from a truck, a high truck.
Shucks.
Worse than that, shit.
Oh, Harry, don't talk like that in the house.
You talk worse than that in bed sometimes.
That's different. I don't like to hear shit at my own table.
Oh, shit.
Oh, honey, you feel bad, Marie said.
No, said Harry. I'm just thinking.
Well, you think it out. I got confidence in you.
I got confidence. That's the only thing I have got.
Do you want to tell me about it?
No. Only don't worry no matter what you hear.
I won't worry.
Listen, Marie. Go on up to the upstairs trap and bring me the Thompson gun, and look in that wooden box with the shells and see all the clips are filled.
Don't take that.
I got to.
Do you want any boxes of shells?
No, I can't load any clips. I got 4 clips.
Honey, you aren't going on that kind of a trip.
I'm going on a bad trip.
Oh, God, she said. Oh, God, I wish you didn't have to do these things.
Go on and get it and bring it down here. Get me some coffee.
Okay, said Marie.
She leaned over the table and kissed him on the mouth.
Leave me alone, Harry said. I got to think.
He sat at the table and looked at the piano, the sideboard and the radio, the picture of September Morn, and the pictures of the Cupids holding bows behind their heads, the shiny real oak table, and the shiny real oak chairs, and the curtains on the windows. And he thought, what chance have I to enjoy my home? Why am I back to worse than where I started? It'll all be gone, too, if I don't play this right. The hell it will. I haven't got 60 bucks left outside of the house, but I'll get a steak out of this. Those damn girls. That's all that old woman and I could get with what we've got. Do you suppose the boys in her went before I knew her?
Here it is, said Marie, carrying it by the web-sling strap. They're all full.
I got to go, Harry said.
He lifted the chunky weight of the dismounted gun in its oil-stained canvas web case, put it under the front seat of the car.
Goodbye, Marie said.
Goodbye, old woman.
I won't worry, but please take care of yourself.
Be good.
Oh, Harry, she said, and held him tight against her.
Let me go. I ain't got no time. He patted her on the back with his arm stump.
You and your loggerhead flipper, she said. Oh, Harry, be careful.
I got to go. Goodbye, old woman.
Goodbye, Harry.
She watched him go out of the house, tall, wide-shouldered, flat-backed, his hips narrow,
moving, still, she thought, like some kind of animal, easy and swift and not old yet. He moves so light and smooth-like, she thought. And when he got in the car, she saw him blonde, with the sunburned hair, his face with the broad Mongol cheekbones, and the narrow eyes, the nose broken at the bridge, the wide mouth, and the round jaw, and getting in the car, he grinned at her, and she began to cry. His goddamn face, she thought. Every time I see his goddamn face, it makes me want to cry.
Chapter 15. There were three tourists at the bar at Freddy's, and Freddy was serving them. One was a very tall, thin, wide-shouldered man in shorts, wearing thick-lensed spectacles, tanned, with small, closely trimmed, sandy mustache. The woman with him had her blonde, curly hair cut short like a man's, a bad complexion, and the face and build of a lady wrestler. She wore shorts, too. "Oh, nerts to you," she was saying to the third tourist, who had a rather swollen reddish face, a rusty-colored mustache, a white cloth hat with a green celluloid visor, and a trick of talking with a rather extraordinary movement of his lips as though he were eating something too hot for comfort. "How charming," said the green-visored man. I'd never heard the expression actually used in conversation. I thought it was an obsolete phrase, something one saw in print in, the funny papers, but never heard. "Nerts, nerts, double nerts to you," said the lady wrestler lady in a sudden access of charm, giving him the benefit of her pimpled profile. "How beautiful," said the green-visored man. "You put it so prettily. Isn't it from Brooklyn originally?" "You mustn't mind her, she's my wife," the tall tourist said. "Have you two met?"
"Oh, nerts to him and double nerts to meeting him," said the wife. "How do you do?"
"Not so badly," the green-visored man said. "How do you do?"
"She does marvelously," the tall one said. "You ought to see her."
Just then Harry came in, and the tall tourist's wife said,
"Isn't he wonderful? That's what I want. Buy me that, Papa."
"Can I speak to you?" Harry said to Freddy.
"Certainly, go right ahead and say anything you like,"
the tall tourist's wife said. "Shut up, you whore," Harry said. "Come in the back, Freddy." In the back was B-Lips waiting at the table.
"Hello, big boy,"
he said to Harry.
"Shut up," said Harry.
"Listen," Freddy said. "Cut it out. You can't get away with that. You can't call my trade names like that. You can't call a lady a whore in a decent place like this."
"A whore," said Harry. "Hear what she said to me?"
"Well, anyway, don't call her a name like that to her face."
"All right. You got the money?"
"Of course," said B-Lips. "Why wouldn't I have the money? Didn't I say I'd have the money?"
"Let's see it."
B-Lips handed it over. Harry counted $1,000 bills and 420s. "It should be $1,200.
"Less my commission," said B-Lips.
"Come on with it."
"No."
"Come on.
Don't be silly."
"You miserable little crut."
"You big bully," B-Lips said. "Don't try to strong-arm it away from me because I haven't got it here."
"I see," said Harry. "I should have thought of that. Listen, Freddy. You've known me a long time. I know she's worth 1,200. This is 120 short. Take it and take a chance on the 120 and the charter."
"That's $320, Freddy said.
It was a painful sum for him to name as a risk, and he sweated while he thought about it. "I got a car and a radio in the house that's good for it."
"I can make out a paper on that," B-Lips said.
"I don't want any paper," Freddy said. He sweat again and his voice was hesitant. Then he said,
"All right, I'll take a chance.
But for Christ's sake, be careful with the boat, will you, Harry?"
"Like it was my own."
"You lost your own," said Freddy, still sweating, his suffering now intensified by that memory.
"I'll take care of her."
"I'll put the money in my box in the bank," Freddy said. Harry looked at B-Lips.
"That's a good place," he said, and grinned.
"Bartender?"
someone called from the front.
"That's you," Harry said.
"Bartender,"
came the voice again. Freddy went out to the front.
"That man insulted me,"
Harry could hear the high voice saying, but he was talking to B-Lips. "I'll be tied up to the dock there at the front of the street.
It isn't half a block. All right? That's all.
All right, Big Shot.
Don't you Big Shot me.
However you like.
I'll be there from 4 o'clock on.
Anything else?
They gotta take me by force, see? I know nothing about it. I'm just working on the engine. I got nothing aboard to make a trip. I've hired her from Freddy to go charter fishing. They've got to hold a gun on me to make me start her, and they've got to cut loose the lines.
What about Freddy? You didn't hire her to go fishing from him.
I'm going to tell Freddy.
You better not.
I'm going to.
You better not.
Listen, I've done business with Freddy since during the war. Twice I've been partners with him, and we never had trouble. You know how much stuff I've handled for him? He's the only son of a bitch in this town I would trust.
I wouldn't trust anybody.
You shouldn't. Not after the experiences you've had with yourself.
Lay off me.
All right, go out and see your friends. What's your out?
They're Cubans. I met them out at the roadhouse. One of them wants to cash a certified check. What's wrong with that?
And you don't notice anything?
No, I tell them to meet me at the bank.
Who drives them?
Some taxi.
What's he supposed to think they are, violinists?
We'll get one that don't think. There's plenty of them that can't think in this town. Look at Jesus.
Jesus is smart. He just talks funny.
I'll have them call a dumb one.
Get one hasn't any kids.
They all got kids. Ever see a taxi driver without kids?
You are a goddamn rat.
Well, I never killed anybody, Belips told him.
Nor you never will. Come on, let's get out of here. Just being with you makes me feel crummy.
Maybe you are crummy.
Can you get them from talking?
If you don't paper your mouth.
Paper yours, then. I'm going to get a drink, Harry said.
Out in front, the three tourists sat on their high stools. As Harry came up to the bar, the woman looked away from him to register disgust.
What will you have? Asked Freddy.
What's the lady drinking? Harry asked.
A Cuba Libre.
Then give me a straight whiskey.
The tall tourist with the little sandy mustache and the thick-lensed glasses leaned his large, straight-nosed face over toward Harry and said, Say, what's the idea of talking that way to my wife?
Harry looked him up and down and said to Freddy, What kind of a place you running?
What about it? The tall one said.
Take it easy, Harry said to him.
You can't pull that with me.
Listen, Harry said. You came down here to get well and strong, didn't you?
Take it easy. And he went out.
I should have hit him, I guess, the tall tourist said.
What do you think, dear?
I wish I was a man, his wife said.
You'd go a long way with that build, the green-visored man said into his beer.
What did you say?
The tall one asked.
I said you could find out his name and address and write him a letter telling him what you think of him.
Say, what's your name, anyway?
What are you doing, kidding me?
Just call me Professor McWalsey.
My name's Lawton, the tall one said. I'm a writer.
I'm glad to meet you, Professor McWalsey said. Do you write often?
The tall man looked around him. Let's get out of here, dear, he said. Everybody is either insulting or nuts.
It's a strange place, said Professor McWalsey.
Fascinating, really.
They call it the Gibraltar of America, and it's 375 miles south of Cairo, Egypt. But this place is the only part of it I've had time to see yet. It's a fine place, though.
I see you're a professor, all right, the wife said. You know, I like you.
I like you too, darling, Professor McWalsey said. But I have to go now.
He got up and went out to look for his bicycle.
Everybody is nuts here, the tall man said. Should we have another drink, dear?
I like the professor, the wife said. He had a sweet manner.
That other fellow...
Oh, he had a beautiful face, the wife said. Like a Tartar or something. I wish he hadn't been insulting. He looked kind of like Genghis Khan in the face. Gee, he was big.
He had only one arm, her husband said.
I didn't notice, the wife said. Should we have another drink? I wonder who'll come in next.
Maybe Tamerlane, the husband said.
Gee, you're educated, the wife said. But that Genghis Khan one would do me. Why did the professor like to hear me say nerds?
I don't know, dear, Lawton, the writer, said. I never did.
He seemed to like me for what I really am, the wife said. My, he was nice.
You'll probably see him again. Anytime you come in here, you'll see him, Freddy said. He lives in here. He's been here for 2 weeks now.
Who's the other one who speaks so rude?
Him? Oh, he's a fellow from around here.
What does he do?
Oh, a little of everything, Freddy told her. He's a fisherman. How did he lose his arm? I don't know. He got it hurt some way.
Gee, he's beautiful, the wife said.
Freddy laughed. I heard him call a lot of things, but I never heard him called that.
Don't you think he has a beautiful face?
Take it easy, lady, Freddy told her. He's got a face like a ham with a broken nose on it.
My, men are stupid, the wife said. He's my dream man.
He's a bad dream man, Freddy said.
All this time the writer sat there with a sort of stupid look on his face, except when he'd look at his wife admiringly.
Anyone would have to be a writer or an F.E.R.A. man to have a wife look like that, Freddy thought.
God, isn't she awful? Just then in came Albert. Where's Harry?
Down at the dock.
Thanks, said Albert.
He went out, and the wife and the writer kept on sitting there, and Freddy stood there worrying about the boat and thinking how his legs hurt from standing up all day. He had put a grating over the cement, but it didn't seem to do much good. His legs ached all the time.
Still, he was doing a good business, as good as anybody in town and with less overhead. That woman was goofy, all right. And what kind of a man was it would pick out a woman like that to live with? Not even with your eyes shut, thought Freddy. Not with a borrowed. Still, they were drinking mixed drinks. Expensive drinks. That was something.
Yes, sir, he said, right away.
A tanned-faced, sandy-haired, well-built man wearing a striped fisherman's shirt and khaki shorts came in with a very pretty dark girl who wore a thin white wool sweater and dark blue slacks.
If it isn't Richard Gordon, said Lawton, standing up, with the lovely Miss Helen. Hello, Lawton, said Richard Gordon. Did you see anything of a rummy professor around here?
He just went out, said Freddy.
Do you want a vermouth, sweetheart? Richard Gordon asked his wife.
If you do, she said, then said, hello, to the two Lawtons. Make mine two parts of French to one Italian, Freddy. She sat on a high stool with her legs tucked under her and looked out at the street. Freddy looked at her admiringly. He thought she was the prettiest stranger in Key West that winter.
Prettier even than the famous, beautiful Mrs. Bradley.
Mrs. Bradley was getting a little big. This girl had a lovely Irish face, dark hair that curled almost to her shoulders and smooth, clear skin. Freddy looked at her brown hand holding the glass.
How's the work? Lawton asked Richard Gordon.
I'm going all right, Gordon said. How are you doing?
James won't work, Mrs. Lawton said. He just drinks.
Say, who is this Professor McWalsey? Lawton asked.
Oh, he's some sort of professor of economics, I think, on a sabbatical year or something. He's a friend of Helen's.
I like him, said Helen Gordon.
I like him too, said Mrs. Lawton.
I liked him first, Helen Gordon said happily.
Oh, you can have him, Mrs. Lawton said. You good little girls always get what you want.
That's what makes us so good, said Helen Gordon.
I'll have another vermouth, said Richard Gordon. Have a drink? He asked the Lawtons.
Why not? Said Lawton.
Say, are you going to that big party the Bradleys are throwing tomorrow?
Of course he is, said Helen Gordon.
I like her, you know, said Richard Gordon. She interests me, both as a woman and as a social phenomenon.
Gee, said Mrs. Lawton, you can talk as educated as the professor.
Don't strut your illiteracy, dear, said Lawton.
Do people go to bed with a social phenomenon? Asked Helen Gordon, looking out the door.
Don't talk rot, said Richard Gordon.
I mean, is it part of the homework of a writer? Helen asked.
A writer has to know about everything, Richard Gordon said. He can't restrict his experience to conform to bourgeois standards.
Oh, said Helen Gordon. And what does a writer's wife do?
Plenty, I guess, Mrs. Lawton said. Say, you ought to have seen the man who was just in here and insulted me and James.
He was terrific.
I should have hit him, Lawton said.
He was really terrific, said Mrs. Lawton.
I'm going home, said Helen Gordon.
Are you coming, Dick?
I thought I'd stay downtown a while, Richard Gordon said.
Yes, said Helen Gordon, looking in the mirror behind Freddy's head.
Yes, Richard Gordon said.
Freddy, looking at her, figured that she was going to cry.
He hoped it wouldn't happen in the place.
Don't you want another drink? Richard Gordon asked her. No, she shook her head. Say, what's the matter with you?
Asked Mrs. Lawton.
Aren't you having a good time?
A dandy time, said Helen Gordon. But I think I'd better go home just the same.
I'll be back early, Richard Gordon said.
Don't bother, she told him.
She went out.
She hadn't cried. She hadn't found John McWalsey either.
Chapter 16. Down at the dock, Harry Morgan had driven up alongside of where the boat lay, seeing there was no one around, lifted the front seat of his car, skidded the flat, web, oil-heavy case out, and dropped it down into the cockpit of the launch. He got in himself and opened the engine hatch and put the machine gun case below out of sight. He turned on the gas valves and started both engines. The starboard engine ran smoothly after a couple of minutes, but the port engine missed on the second and fourth cylinders, and he found the plugs were cracked, looked for some new plugs but couldn't find them.
Got to get plugs and fill gas, he thought.
Below with the engines, he opened the machine gun case and fitted the stock to the gun. He found two pieces of fan belting and four screws, and cutting slits in the belting, rigged a sling to hold the gun under the cockpit floor to the left of the hatch, just over the port engine. It lay there, cradled easily, and he shoved a clip from the four held in the web pockets in the case up into the gun. Kneeling between the two engines, he reached up to take the gun. There were only two movements to make. First, unhook the strap of belting that passed around the receiver just behind the bolt. Then pull the gun out of the other loop. He tried it, and it came easily one-handed. He pushed the little lever all the way over from semi-automatic to automatic and made sure the safety was on. Then he fastened it up again. He could not figure out where to put the extra clips, so he shoved the case under a gas tank below where he could reach it with the butts of the clips lying toward his hand. If I go down a time first after we're underway, I can put a couple in my pocket, he thought. Be better not to have it on, but something might jar the damn thing off. He stood up. It was a fine, clear afternoon, pleasant, not cold, with a light north breeze. It was a nice afternoon, all right. The tide was running out, and there were two pelicans sitting on the piling at the edge of the channel. A grunt fishing boat, painted dark green, chugged past on the way around to the fish market, the Negro fisherman sitting in the stern holding the tiller. Harry looked out across the water, smooth with the wind blowing with the tide, gray-blue in the afternoon sun, out to the sandy island formed when the channel was dredged where the shark camp had been located. There were white gulls flying over the island. Be a pretty night, Harry thought. Be a nice night to cross. He was sweating a little from being down around the engines, and he straightened up and wiped his face with a piece of waste. There was Albert on the dock.
Listen, Harry, he said. I wish you'd carry me.
What's the matter with you now?
They're only going to give us 3 days a week on the relief now. I just heard about it this morning. I got to do something.
All right, said Harry. He had been thinking again. All right.
That's good, said Albert. I was afraid to go home to see my old woman. She gave me hell this noon like it was me had laid off the relief.
What's the matter with your old woman? Asked Harry cheerfully. Why don't you smack her?
You smack her, Albert said. I'd like to hear what she'd say. She's some old woman to talk.
Listen, Al, Harry told him. Take my car and this, and go around to the marine hardware and get 6 metric plugs like this one. Then go get a 20-cent piece of ice and a half a dozen mullets. Get 2 cans of coffee, 4 cans of corned beef, 2 loaves of bread, some sugar, and 2 cans of condensed milk. Stop at the Sinclair and tell them to come down here and put in 150 gallons. Get back as soon as you can,
and change the number 2 and the number 4 plugs in the port engine counting back from the flywheel. Tell them I'll be back to pay for the gas. They can wait or find me at Freddy's. Can you remember all that? We're taking a party out tarponing and fishing them tomorrow.
It's too cold for tarpon, Albert said.
The party says no, Harry told him.
Hadn't I better get a dozen mullets? Albert asked. In case the jacks tear them up? There's plenty jacks now in those channels.
Well, make it a dozen. But get back inside an hour and have the gas filled.
Why you want to put in so much gas?
We may be running early and late and not have time to fill.
What's become of those Cubans that wanted to be carried?
Haven't heard anything more from them.
That was a good job.
This is a good job, too. Come on, get going.
What am I going to be working for?
$5 a day, said Harry. If you don't want it, don't take it.
All right, said Albert. Which plugs was it?
The number 2 and the number 4, counting back from the flywheel, Harry told him. Albert nodded his head.
I guess I can remember, he said.
He got into the car and made a turn in it and went off up the street. From where Harry stood in the boat, he could see the brick and stone building and the front entrance of the First State Trust and Savings Bank. It was just a block down at the foot of the street. He couldn't see the side entrance. He looked at his watch. It was a little after 2 o'clock. He shut the engine hatch and climbed up on the dock. Well, now it comes off or it doesn't, he thought. I've done what I can now. I'll go up and see Freddy, and then I'll come back and wait. He turned to the right as he left the dock and walked down a back street so that he would not pass the bank. Chapter 17. In at Freddy's, he wanted to tell him about it, but he couldn't. There wasn't anybody in the bar, and he sat on a stool and wanted to tell him, but it was impossible. As he was ready to tell him, he knew Freddy would not stand for it. In the old days, maybe, yes, but not now. Maybe not in the old days either. It wasn't until he thought of telling it to Freddy that he realized how bad it was. I could stay right here, he thought, and there wouldn't be anything. I could stay right here and have a few drinks and get hot and I wouldn't be in it. Except there's my gun on the boat. But nobody knows it's mine except the old woman. I got it in Cuba on a trip the time when I peddled those others. Nobody knows I've got it. I could stay here now and I'd be out of it. But what the hell would they eat on? Where's the money coming from to keep Marie and the girls? I've got no boat, no cash, I got no education. What can a one-armed man work at? All I've got is my cojones to peddle. I could stay right here and have, say, 5 more drinks and it would all be over. It would be too late then. I could just let it all slide and do nothing. Give me a drink, he said to Freddy.
Sure.
I could sell the house and we could rent until I got some kind of work. What kind of work? No kind of work. I could go down to the bank and squeal now and what would I get? Thanks. Sure. Thanks. One bunch of Cuban government bastards cost me my arm shooting at me with a load when they had no need to and another bunch of U.S. ones took my boat. Now I can give up my home and get thanks. No thanks. The hell with it, he thought. I got no choice in it. He wanted to tell Freddy so there would be someone knew what he was doing. But he couldn't tell him because Freddy wouldn't stand for it. He was making good money now. There was nobody much in the daytime, but every night the place was full until 2 o'clock. Freddy wasn't in a jam. He knew he wouldn't stand for it. I have to do it alone, he thought, with that poor bloody Albert. Christ, he looked hungrier than ever down at the dock. There were conks that would starve to death before they'd steal, all right. Plenty in this town with their bellies hollering right now. But they'd never make a move. They'd just starve a little every day. They started starving when they were born, some of them. Listen, Freddy, he said, I want a couple of quarts.
Of what?
Bacardi.
Okay.
Pull the corks, will you? You know I wanted to charter her to take some Cubans over.
That's what you said.
I don't know when they'll be going. Maybe tonight. I haven't heard.
She's ready to go any time. You got a nice night if you cross tonight.
They said something about going fishing this afternoon. She's got tackle on board if the Pelicans haven't stolen it off her. It's still there. Well, make a good trip, Freddy said. Thanks. Give me another one, will you?
Of what?
Whiskey. I thought you were drinking Bacardi. I'll drink that if I get cold going across.
You'll cross with this breeze astern all the way, said Freddy.
I'd like to cross tonight. It'll be a pretty night, all right. Let me have another, will you? Just then in came the tall tourist and his wife.
If it isn't my dream, man, she said, and sat down on the stool beside Harry.
He took one look at her and stood up. I'll be back, Freddy, he said. I'm going down to the boat in case that party wants to go fishing.
Don't go, the wife said. Please don't go.
You're comical, Harry said to her, and he went out.
Down the street, Richard Gordon was on his way to the Bradleys' big winter home. He was hoping Mrs. Bradley would be alone. She would be. Mrs. Bradley collected writers as well as their books, but Richard Gordon didn't know this yet. His own wife was on her way home walking along the beach. She had not run into John McWalsey. Perhaps he would come by the house.
Chapter 18.
Albert was on board the boat and the gas was loaded.
I'll start her up and try how those two cylinders hit, Harry said. You got the thing stowed?
Yes.
Cut some baits then.
Do you want a wide bait?
That's right, for tarpon.
Albert was on the stern cutting baits, and Harry was at the wheel warming up the motors when he heard a noise like a motor backfiring. He looked down the street and saw a man come out of the bank. He had a gun in his hand, and he came running. Then he was out of sight. Two more men came out carrying leather briefcases and guns in their hands and ran in the same direction. Harry looked at Albert, busy cutting baits. The fourth man, the big one, came out of the bank door as he watched, holding a Thompson gun in front of him, and as he backed out of the door, the siren in the bank rose in a long, breath-holding shriek, and Harry saw the gun muzzle jump, 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 and heard the bop, 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 small and hollow-sounding in the wail of the siren. The man turned and ran, stopping to fire once more at the bank door, and as Albert stood up in the stern saying, "Christ, they're robbing the bank! Christ, what can we do?" Harry heard the Ford taxi coming out of the side street and saw it careening up onto the dock. There were three Cubans in the back and one beside the driver.
"Where's the boat?" yelled one in Spanish.
"There, you fool," said another.
"That's not the boat. That's the captain. Come on, come on, for Christ's sake."
"Get out," said the Cuban to the driver. "Get your hands up."
As the driver stood beside the car, he put a knife inside his belt and, ripping it toward him, cut the belt and slit his pants almost to the knee. He yanked the trousers down.
"Stand still," he said.
The two Cubans with the valises tossed them into the cockpit of the launch, and they all came tumbling aboard.
"Get her going," said one.
The big one with the machine gun poked it into Harry's back.
"Come on, Cappy," he said. "Let's go."
"Take it easy," said Harry. "Point that someplace else."
"Cast off those lines," the big one said. "You," to Albert.
"Wait a minute," Albert said. "Don't start her. These are the bank robbers."
The biggest Cuban turned and swung the Thompson gun and held it on Albert.
"Hey, don't! Don't!" Albert said. "Don't!"
The burst was so close to his chest that the bullets whacked like three slaps. Albert slid down on his knees, his eyes wide, his mouth open. He looked like he was still trying to say, "Don't!"
"You don't need no mate," the big Cuban said, "you one-armed son of a bitch." Then in Spanish, "Cut those lines with that fish knife." And in English, "Come on, let's go." Then in Spanish, "Put a gun against his back." And in English, "Come on, let's go, I'll blow your head off."
"We'll go," said Harry. One of the Indian-looking Cubans was holding a pistol against the side his bad arm was on. The muzzle almost touched the hook. As he swung her out, spinning the wheel with his good arm, he looked astern to watch the clearance past the piling and saw Albert on his knees in the stern. His head slipped sideways now, in a pool of it. On the dock was the Ford taxi, and the fat driver in his underdrawers, his trousers around his ankles,
his hands above his head, his mouth open as wide as Albert's. There was still no one coming down the street. The pilings of the dock went past as she came out of the basin, and then he was in the channel passing the lighthouse dock.
"Come on, hook her up," the big Cuban said. "Make some time."
"Take that gun away," Harry said. He was thinking, "I could run her on Crawfish Bar, but sure as hell that Cuban would plug me."
"Make her go," said the big Cuban. Then in Spanish, "Lie down flat, everybody. Keep the captain covered."
He lay down himself in the stern, pulling Albert flat down into the cockpit. The other three all lay flat in the cockpit now. Harry sat on the steering seat. He was looking ahead, steering out the channel, past the opening into the sub-base now, with the notice board to yachts and the green blinker, out away from the jetty, past the fort now, past the red blinker. He looked back. The big Cuban had a green box of shells out of his pocket and was filling clips. The gun lay by his side, and he was filling clips without looking at them, filling by feel, looking back over the stern. The others were all looking astern except the one that was watching him. This one of the two Indian-looking ones, motioned with his pistol for him to look ahead. No boat had started after them yet. The engines were running smoothly, and they were going with the tide. He noticed the heavy slant seawards of the buoy he passed, with the current swirling at its base. "There are two speedboats that could catch us," Harry was thinking. "One, Ray's, is running the mail from Matacumbe. Where's the other? I saw her a couple of days ago on Ed Taylor's way as he checked. That was the one I thought of having B-Lips hire. There's two more," he remembered now. "One the State Road Department has up along the Keys. The other's laid up in the garrison bight. How far are we now?" He looked back to where the fort was well astern, the red brick building of the old post office starting to show up above the Navy Yard buildings, and the yellow hotel building now dominating the short skyline of the town. There was the cove at the fort, and the lighthouse showed above the houses that strung out toward the big winter hotel. 4 miles, anyway, he thought. "There they come," he thought. Two white fishing boats were rounding the breakwater and heading out toward him. "They can't do 10, he thought. "It's pitiful." The Cubans were chattering in Spanish.
"How fast you going, Cappy?" the big one said, looking back from the stern.
"About 12, Harry said.
"What can those boats do?"
"Maybe 10. They were all watching them now, even the one who was supposed to keep him, Harry, covered. "But what can I do?" he thought. "Nothing to do yet." The two white boats got no larger.
"Look at that, Roberto," said the nice-speaking one. "Where? Look!"
A long way back, so far you could hardly see it, a little spout rose in the water.
"They're shooting at us," the pleasant-speaking one said. "It's silly." "For Christ's sake," the big-faced one said. "At 3 miles."
4, thought Harry, all of 4. Harry could see the tiny spouts rise on the calm surface, but he could not hear the shots. "Those conchs are pitiful," he thought. "They're worse. They're comical."
"What government boat is there, Cappy?" asked the big-faced one, looking away from the stern.
"Coast Guard."
"What can she make?"
"Maybe 12.
"Then we're okay now."
Harry did not answer.
"Aren't we okay, then?"
Harry said nothing. He was keeping the rising, widening spire of Sand Key on his left, and the stake on Little Sand Key Shoal showed almost a beam to starboard. In 10 more minutes they would be past the reef.
"What's the matter with you? Can't you talk?"
"What did you ask me?"
"Is there anything can catch us now?"
"Coast Guard plane," said Harry.
"We cut the telephone wire before we came in town," the pleasant-speaking one said.
"You didn't cut the wireless, did you?" Harry asked.
"You think the plane can get here?"
"You got a chance of her until dark," Harry said.
"What do you think, Cappy?"
asked Roberto, the big-faced one. Harry did not answer.
"Come on, what do you think?"
"What did you let that son of a bitch kill my mate for?" Harry said to the pleasant-speaking one who was standing beside him now looking at the compass course.
"Shut up," said Roberto. "Kill you, too."
"How much money you get?" Harry asked the pleasant-speaking one.
"We don't know. We haven't counted it yet. It isn't ours, anyway."
I guess not, said Harry. He was past the light now, and he put her on 225 degrees, his regular course for Havana.